attorney Barry C. Boykin.
Hi, I'm attorney Kevin Johnson.
And welcome to another episode of Dynamite Divorce and Other Matters.
Yes, I believe, Barry, this is episode 24. And with the new year comes something entirely new. We have managed to coerce someone into being our first guest. Would you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Margie Nielsen. I am also a family law attorney in Chicago, and I help people with criminal records as well.
Now, Margie has her own firm. She's in private practice. What firm do you have right
Next
now?
Next Step Legal Services with my partner, Ellen Porter.
And we'll put a link on our description for the podcast so you can click. And you have a website,
yep.
Right? There you go. Right. Okay. If anyone wonders whether they can trust Margie, I can say that I've known her for about 20 years. Barry, probably about the same length of time, right?
Yeah. A little bit longer, but sure.
So happy to have you with us today. And another thing is that Margie has come equipped with a topic and one that she knows a lot more about than I do.
So one thing that I have found interesting, I said that I work in family law, so I do things that, you know, Kevin and Barry normally do. But then I also work with people who have criminal records. I find myself thinking a lot about criminal records in family law because of the fact that I focus on helping people expunge and seal their records or get pardoned. But that means that I am very familiar with how to find a criminal record. So when I'm approaching a family law case where someone may or may not have had involvement with the criminal justice system, maybe I look at their record a little sooner than another family law attorney might. And maybe I think a little bit more about how that could play into a case, just because it's something that I am comfortable doing.
So I am familiar with family law and the extremes to which people go in their behavior. They're out on the fringe emotionally, ethically, spiritually, whatever. But you're also seeing people who cross the line legally, right? And that becomes a matter of documentation, for which apparently you have some insights in how to find that stuff. I don't know. How do you find someone's criminal record? What use can be made of it? I'm glad you're here.
Now, before we launch into it fully, let's have a break for our disclaimer. How about that?
Before we go further,
this podcast is no substitute for the specific legal advice you will get by consulting one-on-one with a licensed attorney in your state or country. We hope that before taking any action that might change your life or your financial situation, and before making decisions that might significantly affect your children and the people around you, you do find and meet with a licensed attorney.
Now on with the show. As we mentioned, our guest, Ms. Margie Nielsen, attorney at law, is here to talk about the use of criminal records. I'd be happy to learn more about that. So please, Margie, what have you got to tell us?
Okay, well, I think that one area that this comes up very frequently, and I know that Barry at Chicago Legal Clinic, now Greater Chicago Legal Clinic, and you, Kevin, when we all worked at Chicago Legal Clinic, we were all involved in the domestic violence panel, right? So very frequently when an individual says that they have been a victim of domestic violence, one of the questions that follows is, did you ever call the police? Was there ever an arrest? Was there ever a conviction? And so I think that for people who are representing themselves, who maybe had to leave the marital residence or the residence they were living with their ex, they may not have had all those paper records. So I think how to find that easily is something that could be very helpful to someone who's trying to demonstrate that they were, in fact, a victim. So one way to do that for more recent cases, I think this started in about 2014, is that the Chicago Police Department, if you just go to Chicago Police Department homepage, what comes up almost immediately is the adult records search. And you can just put in someone's name and you can find an arrest record for them that includes a photograph that was taken at the time of arrest. So, for example, if your opposing party has a very common name, you also get a picture. and then you get a little bit of information about the charge and the date of arrest.
I'm hearing arrest, the word arrest. Now, in my view, there's a difference between arrest and conviction. There's a presumption of innocence. People can be arrested on false charges. Are you saying that arrests are there or just conviction?
I'm saying that on the Chicago Police Department website, all arrests are there. Okay. And so if someone is trying to say, yes, I did call the police and report this abuse, then that is the first step where they can demonstrate that they did try to get help to prosecute the person who was abusing them. Okay. So that's a separate question than necessarily whether it would be admissible at a hearing. But as I think we all know, there's a lot of family law that never even gets to a hearing, right? So,
yes.
So you're talking to a child's representative, or you're talking to the children's therapist, or you're talking to the judge in a pretrial, and this question comes up, and the other person says, no, I was never arrested. Person accusing me never even made a report. So you could easily pull it up, even on your phone in court, if you happen to have your phone, or on Zoom, if you show the judge your phone when you're holding it up, you can say, look, I have it, right? Or you're talking, like I said, to a child's rep. But then there are other ways to get from the arrest to the conviction if one occurred.
So thinking about the listener who thinks, well, I could find out that my ex has been arrested. I can find out all this stuff. And yet, as an attorney, I'm thinking, yes, but you can't print that out and attach it to pleadings or attach it to your motions. And you can't think you're going to bring an arrest record into court. But what you're saying is there's other levels where we could have an attorney appointed for the child. That sometimes comes up in these, what used to be called custody case, a parenting time case, decision-making case. And that person who's been tasked with investigating and figuring out the child's safety might well be interested in an arrest report.
Now, if I may interject a postscript, Kevin, actually, in my experience, I often receive pro se petitions for order of protection where the police report is attached. And there's some reference in the description that PD number 457623 is attached to my petition. I called the police after he beat me. And so oftentimes a lay practitioner, lay person, when they file their petition, they'll attach everything they've got, photos of bruises, police report, whatever they've got.
And would that be your advice? I mean, Margie, are you saying that throw that stuff onto a pleading, attach it to your petition?
I would not advise someone to do that because I don't think that that is how the material should be used. And I don't think that that's a proper way to advise the court. I do think alleging that you called the police, you know, as after the incident occurred and, you know, perhaps going so far as to say the police advised you to seek the order of protection, I think that that's a natural response to a chain of events. But I do think that the three of us are very familiar with the fact that on cross-examination, someone claiming to have been abused is almost certainly going to receive the question, did you call the police? Was the person prosecuted? Was there a conviction? And very often, someone who says that they were abused, who can't demonstrate that they at least made the arrest report, then their statements about the abuse are considered a little more questionable than if they can show that they did provide the next step, which was going to the police.
It'd be similar to, say, for example, going to the doctor, having a bruise or something, and then they say, did you get any medical care? They say, yes, I did. Here's my intake report from the urgent care or emergency room, right? So it adds to the feeling that something actually did happen and the victim's not just making it up, right?
Right.
Which is the accusation on defense, is that it's all just made up, it's tactical, it's not really real.
Right.
I'd say I'd agree with Margie, though, that I would not attach it to a pleading, or I would not advise a person filling out a petition to attach it to a pleading, but it's useful information in getting the narrative and finding out what happened. And it's part of, now if it comes out in testimony, sometimes it's part of the res geste. I had a judge ask me one time, well, Mr. Boykin, refresh my memory, what's the res geste? and the res geste is just the, it's getting the whole story in, just telling the whole story in its context. What did you do? And then what did you do next? And then what did you do? Mm-hmm. And so the paperwork really helps to refresh recollection or to, as Margie says, to impeach when the abuser denies and says, well, she never did that, or she never, who knows if she went to the police or not, you know. If they try to question the fact that an arrest was ever made or a criminal report was ever filed.
You've mentioned the Chicago Police Department's website and their homepage and the adult record search. Is there any other source that, say, for example, our civilian listeners can tap into to find out stuff about someone's criminal background?
Yes. So this comes up most frequently when an ex-partner starts dating someone else and you're worried about that other person. And especially if that person starts spending a lot of time with your children or maybe begins living with your ex, the Illinois State Police has several databases that can be searched. So if you just go to the Illinois State Police homepage, there's the Sex Offender Registry for Illinois. They have a link to the National Sex Offender Registry. They have a link to a murderer and violent criminal registry. And they also have a database for what they call missing sex offenders, which are non-compliant sex offenders. So they don't know where they are. So this is, again, a set of databases that you can search using first and last name. And then they want you to narrow it down by either county or city and zip code. And then you can find out whether perhaps your ex's new partner is a sex offender or a violent person. You can also just look up their name at the Chicago Police Department website and see if they come up with having had arrests. But once you get basic information about whether or not there's evidence of an arrest or conviction, then you might need to take a trip to the courthouse to actually look for more specific records that could be admitted in a hearing.
So conviction records are a little harder to get. They're not available online like you're discussing, is pretty much a sex offender registry, a violent criminal and murderer list.
Right.
And then the Chicago police having the arrest records, but now no indication of whether that arrest resulted in a conviction. Is that
right? That's correct. For licensed attorneys who register for this service through the Cook County Clerk of Court's office, you can do an online criminal record search now, which until the COVID pandemic was never an option. Prior to that, it had been Cook County's policy that arrest and conviction information through the clerk's office was only available in person at public access computer terminals. Once the pandemic shut down access for a lot of people, then licensed attorneys have this option. But if you are representing yourself and you're not an attorney, the only way to get it is to go to the courthouse. Now all the clerk's offices are open and you can resume access through the public record search on the computer. There's a specific database for criminal records at the clerk's office. And you can take information that you've learned from the other sources, like approximate date of arrest, to narrow down your search if, for example, the person has a really common name and you just put in their name and 50 arrests come up. But now you remember from the Chicago Police Department website or the Illinois State Police a year that something happened, you can narrow it down that way. And then if you do find that they were in fact convicted, they pled guilty, these are some of the keywords. They pled guilty, they were found guilty, they were sentenced. if you look through the record and you see those words at the end of the case, you can ask the clerk of court to print that record out for you and certify it. And that costs typically $6, unless they also charge you to do a search for you, in which case you may end up paying a little bit more. But that record, if you can get a certified copy of a conviction, that is admissible at a hearing for sure.
Wow. So our listeners can personally go to, for example, the Daly Center, Bridgeview, Markham, Rolling Meadows, Skokie, and go into the building. And I believe it's mostly on the first floor and all those branches too. Daly Center, would that involve going up the elevator to room 802? Or what room do you go in the Daly Center? Do you know?
The best place for you to go in the Daly Center if you're representing yourself is the 10th floor, because that is where criminal records are maintained. And that's where the clerks would be most familiar with helping you, and you can pay for your records. If you're just going to do research, though, you can actually use any available terminal on any of the floors where there's a clerk's office.
8th floor, 12th floor, 10th floor.
Lower level.
And having not been in the Daly Center for, I don't know, 7 months, I can't imagine going in there and going in an elevator, but that's what people are now doing. Is that right? They are now going back in the building in a limited way, right?
Yes. I mean, with precautions, masks, you have to answer the questions about whether you've been sick and so forth.
And if they want to, the same information is available at the branch courthouses of Bridgeview, Markham's, Rolling Meadows, Skokie. And that would mean free parking, another benefit. Also, then they go in and they're on the first floor. They don't usually have no elevator to get to the clerks in those branches, right?
That is correct. The downside to that is that there's usually only 2 to 3 computers at most, sometimes only one.
Okay. So that's a huge resource I didn't know about, though. The homepage for arrest reports. Now, I'm gathering that the Chicago Police Department's homepage and the arrest information is going to be limited to arrests inside the city limits of Chicago. Is that right?
That is true. Although sometimes the arrest is on a warrant from a different location. But yes, the Chicago Police Department website is limited to activities conducted by the Chicago Police Department. But the Illinois State Police one for the registries, one is Illinois specific, so the whole state. And then, like I said, there is a link to the national website.
For the sex offenders, the murderers, and violent criminals?
The sex offenders have a national website. I just looked at it before we recorded, and it says that Illinois does not report geographic data in the way that the national database wants. So it's actually really hard to search Illinois. But we have a lot of people who live in Indiana or who may have people that they're dating who are in Indiana. So Indiana does report, and it's very easy to search in Indiana.
Wow, great. In my understanding that the Illinois State Police website lacks the arrest information, right? Does not have arrests.
That's true. So there's a big gap in the type of information. So Chicago Police Department, if you've ever been arrested since they started posting this, which I think is about 2014, everything is in there. The Illinois State Police not only has convictions, but it's only convictions for people who were required to register. So they had to have been convicted for a type of offense that requires registration in Illinois, or if you link to the national database. So there is a resource that you can look at that is between those two, which is the Illinois Department of Corrections website. And this is mostly for people who are currently incarcerated or who are currently on parole. But sometimes you can catch people where they haven't quite updated the fact that they've been released. This comes in handy if you are trying to serve someone with a petition for divorce and they're incarcerated, but you don't know where they are exactly. Or if you're trying to tell the judge or the child's rep that the reason that the person has stopped participating in the case is because they're now incarcerated. Also, the Cook County Department of Corrections has a similar database. So you can find if somebody is, you know, incarcerated in Cook County Jail or in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Again, this is a name search. So Cook County can be particularly helpful because it's more minor things or people who are there, you know, pending a case outcome. And Illinois, if they're in the Department of Corrections, you know there's a conviction. So you know there's got to be a way to track that court record down.
Additionally, when I do a search, I also search the Cook County Sheriff's website because they also have an inmate locator. So if someone has been arrested and it appears on the Cook County, and sometimes it'll appear on Cook County's record, but not yet perhaps on the Department of Correction record. So I search both just to be sure that I'm capturing the inmate that I'm looking for. Otherwise, you're looking through a whole list of Browns or Smiths or whatever common name it is to try to find the person you want.
We'll put links in the description to, I see four links that we'll need: Chicago Police, Illinois State Police, Illinois Department of Corrections, Cook County Department of Corrections, and Cook County Sheriff's Inmate Locator. So we can put all those links in. So if you look at the description for today's episode, those should be clickable links.
Now, here's one more for you, and that is, the sheriff's website. The sheriff also has a means of civil process if there's been a service of summons. And so oftentimes in an order of protection case, petition has gone out, person will call me, they filed a pro se. I ask, well, has the respondent been served? I don't know. And so I'll go on the sheriff's website, look it up, and I'll see, oh, yes, he was served at such and such an address on such and such a date. So that's very helpful when I'm giving a preliminary advice if the person hasn't found out if the abuser has been served or not. And I'm able to find it out from the sheriff's website.
Alleged abuser. Okay. So, no, as someone who does a fair share of defending on these orders of protection, it can be said that these are alleged acts, alleged abuse. You know, guaranteed, this is something that gets everybody's attention because victims often suffer in silence. And when they come forward, it's sometimes not the first time. They're at wit's end because it's been going on for a while. And Margie, you're much more familiar with the victim side, probably Barry too, but sometimes they'll tolerate anything for themselves, but when the child gets involved or something, and then that's a trigger. And then everything comes flooding out, the history, and it's been like this. And I like the idea of going back and searching for these records because you do get alleged abusers. Well, we could say in family law in general, we get people stretching the truth, minimizing the damage they've done, or otherwise spinning the story. And it's really good to kind of bring them to ground with a few documents. So, have you ever been arrested? Oh, no, never. Well, how about this? Could you do that in a court proceeding? Could you cross-examine them on a statement about arrest? Would that be impeachable? What does that mean? Wait, impeachable. Could you then, say in a hearing, as we've talked about hearings in past episodes, you ask someone a question because you think you know the answer. You then get a lie or maybe a half-truth, and you have a document. So you work at this company, is that right? No, never. Well, how about this paycheck or something like that, to confront them with something that's the opposite of what they just said. Is that fair game in a hearing to ask them if they've been arrested?
Well, it depends on the context, I think. For my part, just answering it from the cases that I handle, because in many cases, an arrest that does not lead to conviction, I'm not going to be admitting an arrest record or seeking to admit an arrest record. However, if I have it and the other party has testified, and as you say, if they made a statement that seems to indicate the contrary, that, or for example, quite often what will happen is that they'll represent the arrest took place decades ago. They say, oh, that was 30 years ago. You know, it has no relevance now. Well, wait a minute. You say 30 years ago, I have to commit them to the testimony. You say it was 30 years ago. And you said that under oath. You said that in the deposition. And that was your sworn statement that it was 30 years ago. Well, I have here Exhibit A, which shows that last year that, well, how do you explain the arrest for a felony use of a gun? That's how it would come out. It would come out insofar as challenging their story if they're saying something wildly different from the records. Just explain that to us, you know, that I have this record.
So you have it ready.
Yeah, I have it ready.
Waiting for the moment, waiting for that moment when they say, I'm pure as the driven snow. I've never been in trouble before, or something, words to that effect, where they try to lay out this history of nothing's happened and I don't know why this person's making this up. I've been clean. Nothing happened. And I haven't been arrested for 10 years. Boom. They stepped into a trap because you've got the arrest record.
Their recollection is faulty. So I'm going to help to correct your recollection. It wasn't 30 years ago. It was
a lot recently.
Yeah.
Last year. Yeah. Margie, if you managed to get a hold of that certified record of conviction at maybe the clerk's office, is it fair game? Can you just use it in court? Sounds like it'd be evidence.
It's the right type of evidence. Unlike an arrest record, which is simply a statement of what somebody said to the police, which generally cannot be used in a hearing, a conviction record is a finding of guilt. And because it's certified by the court, it's a record that the judge would accept as a type of evidence that should be considered in a hearing. But it's still subject to certain types of objections. For example, relevance. So if you have a family law case and it was a domestic battery conviction involving abuse of the child of the case, I think you're pretty clearly going to have an argument that this is a relevant conviction. But let's say you're trying to show that this person is just violent in general and you found a conviction of a 20-year-old domestic battery against a totally different person. You know, maybe the person that you're arguing with in court is going to be able to make a successful objection that that's not a relevant piece of information for the judge to hear because it's so old, it has nothing to do with the parties. So it's the right type of evidence. You can try to present it, but perhaps someone will argue that it's not significant to this case and therefore the judge should not consider it in this case.
Well, I have an answer to that, Kevin, which is in a case, was not my case, but a case that I was present in during the time. And of course, we were in court and it was a divorce case where there was domestic violence. And so the victim, we might say, the alleged victim, precipitating the incident occurred decades in the past. And so, of course, the other party's attorney objected strenuously and says, well, Judge, how can this have any bearing on this current events and the request? And but the attorney was able to tie it in with current events and says, well, what happened recently that caused you to be afraid? Well, Your Honor, he threatened me to do the same thing over again just last week. So the tie-in between the decades-old conviction, let's say, and the current event, then brought it in to be relevant.
Right.
So,
I mean, I think that that's the history of abuse that we always try to demonstrate to the court, because maybe a couple times the person who was abused didn't call the police. And then they did call the police, but they dropped the case. And then eventually you got to a single conviction, but mm-hmm. you would want to try to show the whole history, and you could find those records.
So we're coming to the end of our time for part one of this episode 24, and we'll hope you stick with us and listen to part two. I'm attorney Kevin Johnson.
I'm attorney Barry C. Boyd.
I'm guest attorney Margie Nielsen.
I'll see you in part two.